Good afternoon. It's 12:07. This is Midday Matters on 89.1 WBOI. I'm Sean Beter. Very glad to be with you on this Monday, June 17th. On today's program, we're talking budget issues with Fort Wayne City Councilman Russ Yale and Dr. John Crawford, both with us today. Also with us in studio, Bob Kaler, one of the usual suspects. Bob, thanks for making time today.
Thank you.
And Dan Stockman from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, who's been following this issue very closely, is with us once again as well. Dan, thanks for being here.
Thanks. Always a pleasure.
We'll introduce our guests in just a few moments here, but we invite you to join the discussion today. Call us at 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. We'd love to hear from you today. With us in studio here, Councilman Russ Yale. Russ Yale, thanks very much for being with us in the studio.
Thanks
today.
For having me back.
And with us by phone, Councilman Dr. John Crawford. Dr. Crawford, we appreciate you making time for us today as well.
Thanks for having us.
Dan Stockman, I know you wanted to, there's a lot to get to this hour, so take it away.
There is. It's been a complicated topic, and it's one that's been with us for quite a while now. As Dr. Crawford could tell you in much personal detail, the city put together a fiscal policy group, I believe, last summer. They've been studying the issues, and at the heart of the issue and what they've been looking at is the city is facing a budget crunch. There's really no question about that from any side, from anybody. With the imposition of property tax caps, declining gas tax revenue, rising expenses, the city expects to have millions of dollars less than it has expenses for the 2014 budget. We've seen this coming for a while, and we've been struggling for months to try to figure out exactly what to do. So compounding it let's just start there. We know that we're millions of dollars short. There's some, I'm not even sure disagreement would really be the right word, maybe give and take. There's some give and take on how much we're short, because there are questions about how much do we need in cash reserves, how much do we need for this or that expense. So, Dr. Crawford, if you could begin, again, you know, you've spent months studying the issue with the fiscal policy group. Let's just talk a little bit about how much the city is short and where, how, what's that bottom line for you?
Sure. Well, you know, last year, if you just looked at what the city spent in for the 2013 budget, looked like we had a structural deficit. In other words, we had $3 or $4 million more of expenses than we had revenue. But at that time, we had a cash balance of about $9 million. So council chose to still freeze the property tax levy. In other words, we balanced the budget by spending down the cash balance. But we're kind of to the point now where you can't do that again. And I was kind of in favor of freezing the property tax levy last year, because I was quite sure we were going to come to this point where we probably have to look at a possible tax increase, or at least a totally different way of approaching things, like Councilman Yale and Harper are looking at. And by not doing the property tax levy last year increase, I think it kind of brings everything to a head. We really do see we have that same, you know, $3 to $5 million structural deficit just to spend what we did last year. But over this last year of going through all the city's finances, we realize we probably have about $14 million of unmet needs each year annually going forward that we need to cover, as in streets, parks, police, fire, and stuff like that. And that's one thing I wanted to look at this year, because Let's see. I guess I have to thank the voters for giving me an extended four-year vacation from 2008 through 2012. And during that time,
maybe what you should have done is a cigarette tax. We might be having a different conversation.
Even more popular then. Anyway, so because of that, I guess I kept track of the city's finances. But going through this analysis over the last year, I didn't realize we were $52 to $60 million behind in roads, that much of a backlog, because it wasn't that way in 2008, because until the property tax caps came along, we were keeping up much better. And I knew we hadn't done a police or a fire academy for several years, but I didn't realize how many people were eligible for retirement in police and fire. And I didn't realize how much, you know, the parks needed in capital. So I guess I didn't realize that there were that much unmet needs, and by kind of coming to a crisis like this, by freezing the property taxes last year, we kind of are at the point where we really have to look at everything, and I think that's why some of the things that might have been impossible before to look at, like significant cuts to union benefits and significant use of legacy money, suddenly become possible when people realize everything has to go on the table. So that's why I think we've spent a lot of time this year. You know, we didn't just get under the hood of the city finances. We went up the muffler and out the sunroof and everything you could possibly think of. We have a better analysis than we've ever had with the city finances.
We're looking for coins in between the seats. Councilman Yale, one of the things that's been kind of astounding to me as a council observer, you know, over the years to see this, you know, we have a 6-3 Republican majority on a council, but to see this kind of general consensus that not only do we just need to erase that structural deficit, but we have wide-ranging consensus that we actually need to increase spending on several big-ticket core service items, which is, again, as a council observer, not something that you see every day, where you know, you have this near unanimous or unanimous support for, hey, we need another $3 million a year for parks. We need more spending on police and fire. We need a lot more spending on roads. And I wonder if you could talk about that, because you're hardly known as a tax and spend liberal.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, again, a rather conservative body is saying we actually need to do more as a government in work on these core services.
Yeah, I think regardless of where a listener stands on the income tax increases, there is a lot that they can like about what council and the administration is doing right now. You know, I have been adamant and outspoken that an income tax is not warranted and should only be the option of last resort. So I have been on, you know, I have had policy differences with the administration on this issue. But I am really pleased that in the amount of transparency that's taken place. It has certainly not been just throw an ordinance together and have council vote on it. We started openly having discussions since March 12th. We've all been allowed to present our opinions, our facts, or, you know, what, you know, if there are options that haven't been explored yet. And I think what's important is also is there has been a nice coalescing around our core responsibilities, which have been neglected. And you might say we need increased spending. I, you know, from my perspective, I'm saying we need to reprioritize what we're doing. Either way, we've pretty much have 9 members on council, all of whom seem to say, okay, we need to spend about $14.6 million more on our neglected roads, on our neglected police and fire academies, and on our neglected parks departments. And I think also to council's credit, there's been very little finger pointing on where exactly, you know, how exactly we got to this situation. So I really am pleased, because that is a lot to tackle. If you compare that to Washington, where nobody can even agree on where they're at, nobody can agree on a set of facts, nobody can even agree on what the problem is. There's we've gone ahead and we've said, okay, let's forget all that. Let's tackle the problem. Let's try to agree on some numbers. Let's try to agree on some priorities. And now the question is, how do we get there?
Yeah, and even the number disagreements have been pretty slight.
We're talking today about the municipal budget gap in the city of Fort Wayne. And with us on this program, Russ Yale, a Fort Wayne City Councilman, also Dr. John Crawford, Councilman as well. And in studio, of course, Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel, Dan Stockman from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. And we hope you'll get involved in the conversation today. Do call us at 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Bob Kaler.
Dr. Crawford and Russ, can you give me an idea how strong the consensus is on what to cut to help make up this shortfall and what's included in that?
Well, let's see. I guess right now on the table there's about $7.5 million worth of reductions in what would have been spent from the property tax supported budget in 2014 as in 2013. We've already agreed on shifting the water hydrant fees to city utilities. I think we're going to tonight settle the business about spousal coordination of benefits, which saves about $2 million. And then there's some other changes to employee benefits that are still kind of in the air there. I'm not sure where we'll end up on those. But if everything was passed that the fiscal policy group recommended, it would be about $7.5 million.
And I'd like to just add, you talk about the differences between the way Fort Wayne's taking on a tough issue and, say, Washington. I mean, just the fact that the administration can put forward $7.5 million of cuts and get general consensus, I think is I think that's really important. I think that's really noteworthy, regardless of where one stands on the income tax side.
And that's also one of the things when I was in the fiscal policy group and trying to decide where I was going to come down on this, and I still haven't until we finish the discussion. But I told the administration and the mayor and some other people that, you know, I wouldn't even begin to consider an income tax increase until I had significant cuts, ones that I consider really truly cuts, like some of the employee benefits and some of the other things we're looking at, and a significant use of at least a portion of the legacy money, and we've agreed to $5 million. So I can tell people out there that, yeah, you know, we actually did look at everything. We made significant cuts, and yeah, you're right, we got, you know, this money over there at the legacy fund, and why aren't we using that? Yes, we are using some of that. There's everything's on the table, and I think that's one of the things that by not doing the property tax increase last year, it kind of made some things that would have been impossible become possible.
We do need to take just a quick break here. We'll continue this discussion when we return. In the meantime, we hope you'll get involved in the conversation. The number one more time, 800-471-9264. Post on our Facebook wall, send us a tweet, or email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Stay with us. Back in 2 minutes.
On the next Fresh Air, an untold story from World War II. Thousands of American soldiers deserted the front lines. Journalist Charles Glass says most served bravely in combat before leaving their units.
Those soldiers who fought continuously and were never rotated out of the front lines simply were under so much pressure for so long that they cracked.
Glass's book is The Deserters. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
All this month on Talk of the Nation, we've conducted a series of conversations to look ahead on important issues and with some of our favorite guests and colleagues. Up next, NPR's longtime New York correspondent, Margot Adler. Post-Occupy, post-Sandy, almost post-Bloomberg. I'm Neil Conan, a look ahead with Margot Adler, plus the key to containing carbon, cows. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This afternoon at 2 p.m. here on WBOI.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Indiana Tech Law School, opening in Fort Wayne, August 2013. Information on admissions and curriculum online at indianatech.edu/law or 855-TECH-LAW. Support for this program on WBOI is provided by United Way of Allen County, announcing this year's Top Campaign Committee Award recipient, GM FWA Truck Assembly Plant UAW Local 2209. That's what it means to live united. UnitedWayAllenCounty.org.
It's Midday Matters on WBOI. I'm Sean Beter, along with Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. Dan Stockman is here from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, joining us by phone for the hour. Fort Wayne City Councilman Dr. John Crawford, and with us in studio, of course, Russ Yale, also of the Fort Wayne City Council. We're talking today about the looming 2014 budget gap and how to fix it in Fort Wayne. And we want to hear from you today. Call us at 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Looks like we have a few callers on the line. Let's open the phones here and go to Jim. Jim, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hi there, Sean. Of Buter Road fame, for those who don't know. Dr. Crawford, we had a chat at a news conference a few months back, you know me, and I asked a question about last year's levy, which council decided not to take, which amounted, as we agreed, to about $6 million, which didn't reduce anybody's taxes, as we discussed, but rather was distributed to New Haven and other jurisdictions in the county. And isn't that part of the structural deficit? Isn't that sort of a mistake the council made that's now coming back to bite you?
Dr. Crawford.
Depends how you look at it. We had a $52 to $60 million deficit in the backlog of the roads. If you'd have taken that $6 million instead of a $60 million deficit or 52, you'd be looking at 46 to 54. And that would have been if you did spend it on roads. And one of my tenets, I guess, sometime if governments have money, they will spend it on things that they didn't necessarily need to. So by keeping...
that we're something like $50 million behind, so... Over the years, we've been underfunding chronically over and over and over again, underfunding roads, parks,
right,
water system, everything. So it's,
sure, but that was the minority.
It seems like the philosophy of no new taxes is as much of a problem as what you're looking at now. In other words, it's been created by us. And
actually, we weren't doing so bad until the property tax caps came in. Because remember, the property tax caps are going to take about $20 million off of what the city would receive this year. The crisis is engendered by that.
Another way to look at it.
A little closer with that $6 million, but once again, that $6 million, say you'd have thrown it into the roads, you would still have the same, you're still going to have a big unmet needs. And you're still going to have to look at a possible tax increase. And by keeping the budget lean, I still think that things that are now possible would have been impossible. I don't think you would have gotten the cuts on the union benefits. What's that?
Jim, hold on just a moment. I know Dan Stockman wanted to pop in here.
Well, I just want to point out, to be totally fair, another way to look at it is we've saved taxpayers those millions of dollars over the years.
Well, that's one way of looking at it, Dan, but that means that we haven't paid as we've gone. We've been delaying maintenance on everything, so now we're looking at it square in the face. And it might have been easier over the years to have taken those charges and had small tax increases than to be confronted with what we're up to now.
That is absolutely correct. And it's also correct to point out that over the years, our elected representatives on council have made that decision for us. To
my point.
One other thing, Jim, you might realize is council can never increase the budget that comes to us. We can only cut. So in other words, if the mayor and administrations don't put the money into budgets to take care of the roads and whatever, it's not in there in the first place.
Yeah, well, we'll see you tonight.
All right.
Okay.
Jim.
Or tomorrow night, actually.
Yeah, but tomorrow evening. Yep.
He's just real excited.
None of us can wait.
Jim, we appreciate the call. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
You know, one thing we should point out, too, is this division of funds, which does not really get talked about much, but it's kind of a philosophy that we've held. We don't mix the city utilities funds with the general funds, strictly speaking. We generally have not used a lot of property taxes for streets and roads. We've relied on the gas tax to pay for that. And yet, you know, so when you have this conversation, you get letters to the editor, you get comments, you get questions like, well, gee, we have the legacy money, or we have this, or we have, there's money here, there's money there. Why don't, you know, why are we talking about a tax increase when there are these various pools of money? And Dr. Crawford, with your long experience with budget and fiscal policy, maybe you can talk about, in some cases, and clearly we are talking about erasing some of those policies and using more general fund money for streets and roads here. But it's clearly also not a decision we've taken lightly.
It kind of was forced upon us, though, because when the gas tax money is going down every year, although they did add some back this year, but gas tax money has been going down. You know, people are driving less sometimes, and also just general revenues in general are down, and money's kind of fungible. If it's not over here, it's going to move over there, and if it's neither place, it's not going to go into the roads. And the roads kind of get cut because it's easier to cut the roads than it is to cut the police department and lay off people and lay off police officers. So that's why I guess that one has gotten hit pretty bad the last few years. I think total there was only like about $5 million went into the roads last year, and we really probably needed about 13 just to stay even. So and that was because the money wasn't there.
I want to bring back something Dan just touched on there, and Russiel, perhaps you can address this a bit. We do have this this pool of cash, the legacy money. We also have additional reserves in the city coffers. I'm sure a lot of folks were thinking, well, why not use this for this, what is ostensibly, at least right now, kind of a one-time investment when you're talking at least about reinvesting in roads, things like that. All right, is that money on the table?
Oh, it's you're asking a very good policy question. And largely, Councilman Crawford and I are akin in thinking that. There are many little piggy banks of money, $5 million here, a couple million there. Of course, the legacy funds has $30 million in one fund, and the other portion, I think, has another $20 million in it. And the result of that, I think, is you find some of this discretionary spending is very well funded, and then your core responsibilities are not well funded. And a lot of it just has to do with when you set up these unelected, unaccountable boards and give them funding, it does siphon off from the general fund and from larger priorities.
Well, and unaccountable boards such as?
Such as the Redevelopment Commission, the CIB. And we're, you know, and I think we're seeing this as far as our legacy spending. There's a lot of good stuff that we're doing with the legacy spending, but we allocated, I believe, $19 million in December. All but two of it were for downtown. And then in March, we came back and said, we're out of money. Let's go have a 0.5% income tax increase. And there's just a lot of people that just kind of scratch their heads and say, you know, I can't really put my finger on one specific thing that I don't like, but I just don't like the way that adds up.
We're talking today about the Fort Wayne municipal budget gap and how to fix it. And we hope you'll get in touch with us this hour. We are having a bit of an issue with our Ethernet in the studio here at the moment, so we can't check your Facebook posts, your tweets, or your emails at the moment. We'll get that fixed. We hope you will give us a call, though, 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm when we get that fixed. And, of course, Facebook and Twitter will be back up shortly. Dan Stockman, a few minutes here before we need to get to a break.
One last thing. Let me expand on what Russ said about the legacy funds. Councilman Yale and I are sort of in the camp that, yeah, we would have used more legacy money to plug the budget gap, but the majority of council and the mayor and a lot of the community said that they wanted to save more of the legacy money for transformational projects. So, you know, I would have loved to have gotten more than $5 million into the budget from legacy, but trust me, I had to practically pull the mayor's back molars to get to $5 million.
Dr. Crawford with a pry bar.
$2.5 million each molar.
Yeah. And you need to stick with oncology, not dentistry. So.
Dan Stockman, go ahead.
Well, to jump back to the things that we have general consensus on, one of the things that's not talked about a whole lot but does have general consensus is that property taxes are going to increase. Now, what the net effect of that will be becomes a question because of tax caps and things like that. But the administration proposal, off the top of my head, is to raise property taxes next year about $5 million. And the competing Harper-Yale proposal, I believe, would be about $6 million. And while those numbers sound a bit different, they're really not structurally that much different. The city's proposal really does the same thing. It just phases in one increase over 5 years, and over the time period gets to the same place. So while there's been a lot of talk about should we increase the income tax or we should not increase it, there seems to be consensus that property taxes are going to increase. And I wonder if Councilman Yale could speak to that.
Yeah, this touches on the questions of the previous caller, which was having to do with what's the appropriate levy. Well, what a lot of people are forgetting is last year our property values were still falling. The housing market recovery was finally beginning to take place. But to ask people to pay more in property taxes when their house value is going down, I mean, that's not just raising a levy. That's raising their rates. What's different this year, median house housing prices are up 8% in Allen County, and real values seem to be up about 4%. So council has a choice of do you lower rates or do you raise levy? And given that now, whereas last year we were simply talking about throwing property tax dollars into a structural deficit and kind of that black hole, we're actually talking about if in this time where you would natural appreciation of the levy, what to allocate it for. And it's exciting when you're talking about, I'm going to start fixing streets, I'm going to start fixing roads, I'm going to start hiring, fix the Parks Department, hire police and fire. Well, that's what people expect if you talk about levy increases. And I'm real happy that this time around we're talking about doing it the right way, if that indeed is on the table. And I think we can do it without raising income taxes.
And the nice thing about that is because of the caps, generally, by increasing the levy, if your bill goes up, it's because your home value. If you're above that cap, it's because your home value has gone up. Mm-hmm. So, and, kind of a silver lining there.
Dr. Crawford, I know you wanted to weigh in there very briefly, please.
One thing also, because of the caps, the way the property tax stuff works, every other jurisdiction in Allen County since time immemorial has done their full annual maximum tax increase possible. So they're already doing the max. The city's the only one that is below their bank levy. So by going up to the total bank levy, the total property tax bill for a taxpayer isn't going to change that much, but the city's share is going to go up and other jurisdictions are going to go down some. Some of the other jurisdictions said, you know, that they don't really need the money from an income tax, so they will find that some of their property tax revenues will go down. If we do an income tax and they do get more revenue, they are quite free to cut their own annual growth levy if they want, but I wouldn't hold your breath.
we do need to take a quick break for the news here on this Monday edition of Midday Matters. In the meantime, we hope you'll get in touch with us. Our internet connection's currently down in the studio. We're working to get that fixed. In the meantime, we know you can call us and share your questions and your comments at 800-471-9264. And, of course, when we get those fixed, you can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, and our Facebook page and Twitter feed will hopefully be up soon as well. Stay with us. Back in 4 minutes, it's Midday Matters.
On the next Fresh Air, an untold story from World War II. Thousands of American soldiers deserted the front lines. Journalist Charles Glass says most served bravely in combat before leaving their units.
Those soldiers who fought continuously and were never rotated out of the front lines simply were under so much pressure for so long that they cracked.
Glass's book is The Deserters. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Good afternoon. I'm Katie Anderson with WBOY News. In the wake of ISTEP testing disruptions that have called into question the validity of this year's tests, the General Assembly this week will hold the first of two hearings investigating the issue. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports on what lawmakers hope to accomplish.
Legislators initially hoped to have one comprehensive study committee hearing on ISTEP in June, but with results of the tests and a third-party validation of those results not expected until July, Commission on Education co-chairs Bob Boehning and Dennis Cruz will hold two meetings on the topic. Cruz says the first will be an opportunity for school superintendents and officials to air their grievances.
I think it was an embarrassment. I think the kids suffered, and I think it's bad, and I think they deserve an opportunity to have a public hearing.
Boehning says the second meeting will be held after the results are in, allowing the committee to consider solutions once they're armed with more information.
Exactly what happened, how we can prevent in the future, who's culpable for it, and how we make sure that we protect the best interests of our students.
The first meeting takes place Friday in the Senate chamber. The president of CTB McGraw-Hill, the testing company, is expected to testify. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
A former Democratic County chairman and a party member convicted of forging signatures on petitions used to place Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton on the 2008 state primary ballot each could face several years in prison. Former St. Joseph County party chairman Butch Morgan and party member Dan Blythe are scheduled to be sentenced today. The South Bend Tribune reports Morgan faces 2 to 8 years in prison on charges of conspiracy to commit forgery. Blythe could be sentenced to up to 10 years on charges of forgery and falsifying a petition. Both men were found guilty during trials earlier this year, although they said they were innocent. Two co-defendants pleaded guilty and testified against them. The Fort Wayne Tin Caps wrapped up the first half of the season at West Michigan this past weekend. WBOY's Doug Gruber has the results.
The Tin Caps split 4 games against the White Caps to end the first half. Friday night was a 2-1 loss. In a Saturday day-night doubleheader, Fort Wayne was shut out in the early game 5-0, but bounced back in the night game with home runs from catcher Dane Phillips and infielder Diego Gorice, and held on for an 8-7 win. Sunday, the Tin Caps scored 4 runs in both the first and fourth innings and coasted to a 10-5 win, with Justin Hancock getting his 5th win of the season against one loss. That ends the first half, with Fort Wayne's record at 43 wins, 26 losses, finishing 2nd, 1 game behind South Bend, and qualifying for the postseason playoffs. The teams are now off for 3 days for the All-Star game in Dayton tomorrow, and Fort Wayne returns to Parkview Field Thursday night to host South Bend. For WBOI News, I'm Doug Gruber.
The Indiana Department of Homeland Security and state police are reminding state residents to be alert for safety concerns when attending county fairs and other local festivals. They say people should be aware of surroundings and know where to go if shelter is needed because of an unexpected thunderstorm. They also say don't board a ride if broken parts are visible, if there are signs of improper maintenance, or if it is being run by an inattentive operator. Every ride should have a prominently displayed permit issued by Homeland Security. They also recommend using sunscreen, sunglasses, and to drink plenty of water on hot days. Indiana State Board of Animal Health recommends washing hands or using hand sanitizer after touching animals, and not to consume food inside of the barns. And today, you can expect mostly sunny skies and a high near 87. This evening, there is a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms overnight. Otherwise, mostly cloudy with a low of 63. You're listening to Midday Matters on 89.1 WBOI and online at nipr.fm.
Minutes before the top of the hour, 1 o'clock, this is Midday Matters on 89.1 WBOI, your home for NPR News and diverse music. And we're talking on this edition of the program about the looming city budget gap here in Fort Wayne. With us to discuss the topic today is Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel, Dan Stockman from the Journal Gazette, and City Councilman Russ Yale and Dr. John Crawford. And we certainly hope that you'll get involved in the conversation today. The number, it's 800-471-9264. You can always email us. We do have our email back up and working in the studio now. That's middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall. Send us a tweet at Midday Matters. We'd love to have you involved in the conversation today. Dan Stockman.
And the conversation turns to everybody's favorite topic, income taxes. Now, one of the there are several proposals on the table, all of them rather complicated. But one of the uniquer aspects of this is we have Councilman Yale and Councilman Mitch Harper who've put together a proposal to say, wait a minute, we believe that there are ways that we can avoid this tax increase on the income tax side. And Harper or Councilman Yale, I'm sure you're just chomping at the bit to tell us how that works.
You've summarized it very, very well. Our presentation embraces all of the common ground, the proposed spending cuts, as well as the proposed increases in spending for our roads, parks, and public safety. And we believe that we can make the budget balance and achieve all those objectives without raising an income tax.
Now, one of the things that you've talked about, you call it debt slowing. I'm losing the term off the top of my head here.
Delaying the retirement of debt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can talk about that a little bit because one of the key factors in your plan is the retirement of debt and how that frees up revenue. So
right. I think for those that want to critique our plan, we use several diverse tools. And so it's hard to say, well, what exactly is it, especially in a soundbite? Right. What are the differences? But you are keying in on one of the major differences. As you know, the administration said we need a major tax increase because of the property tax caps. We've also pointed out that a major source of our cash flow struggles have to do with the amount of debt that comes out of our debt payments that come out of our budget. Actually, about $17 million, almost equal to the tax cap, comes out of this budget to pay debt. And our point is in this, if you're trying to make a tough decision between raising income taxes or some other tool, when you are retiring that much debt at a time when interest rates are almost zero, you can restructure that in such a way that does not increase the debt, but that it frees up your cash flow and therefore offers you the chance to to get out of the tough situation you're in without raising the income taxes. And so it's a very good tool. Company, you know, you do this all the time when you buy a house. when you refinance your house. Almost the exact same thing that we're talking about on a little bit of a larger scale.
I think the term you used the other night was when you find yourself in a hole created by debt, you can sometimes use debt to step your way out of that.
That's exactly right. I appreciate you using that analogy.
I like to quote people. That's kind of what I do.
We are talking today, of course, about the budget gap here in the city of Fort Wayne in the coming fiscal year, and we want your input, your questions, your comments. Do give us a call. Only about 15 minutes left in the show. It's 800-471-9264. You can always send us an email, middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. With us in studio today, of course, Bob Kaler, Dan Stockman, and Fort Wayne City Councilman Russ Yale and Dr. John Crawford. Bob Kaler.
So, Russ, tell us some more about what the differences are between what the city administration proposes and what you propose that allow you to avoid having an income tax increase.
Some of it has to do with that we believe we've put forward a little bit more of a comprehensive plan. The administration's primary proposals excluded CDIT. Currently, CDIT has about a $2.5 million surplus in it this year in 2013. There's $2.7 million falling out of debt payments in 2014, which was not discussed in any of the administration's proposals. So right there, you found $5 million that are available to you that were not discussed. So when we went down the line, we went with, you know, started with that, and we went down through almost every revenue source and tried to project what the changes were. And of course, we found that the state provided another $2.1 million in MVH funding this year. That helped bridge the gap just a little bit more. That pilot's going to be about $600,000. So there's a lot of a little bit more of, a comprehensive plan that we put together that actually shows where some revenue changes are coming in the positive. And, of course, there's a very fundamental difference in that the administration's proposal projects a $9.1 million surplus. So after they get all the tax increases, which are about $24.4 million, after they pay for the roads, the parks, the police, the things that are being put out there as reasons for the tax increases, they still, by their own numbers, have $9.1 million left over. That's great. I'd love to have a surplus, but I wouldn't want to do that at the expense of taxation. I think that's surplus taxation. And so those are some of the major differences.
Do you guys propose deeper cuts to scheduled spending than the city does?
I would, but you have to understand the context of this discussion has been that the fiscal policy group said our core values in this discussion will be to not reduce the size of staff. That was one of the core values. And then for the sake of harmony and to keep the discussion proper, council's not in a place to put forward a budget. Therefore, we're not in the place. We can't cut what isn't there yet until the budget is in front of us. So I have put down there are things, structural reforms that I would support that have not been addressed yet. But I think you get lost in the weeds. And so we've tried to keep it productive and tried to rather than trying to usurp the mayor's authority in that.
I would agree with Russ's contention and the plan that I'm putting forward also. I don't think we need as big cash balance as perhaps the controller or administration would like to have. They were saying that maybe about 7% would be a nice cash balance, and probably it's going to end up being somewhere over 10 or so if we go with one of the plans that has a 0.5% income tax. But I really think anywhere from 2 to 5 million cash balance is fine, because if you have unallocated CDIT dollars of 6.5 million, and if you have unallocated TIF dollars of some number, And if you realize you don't always, usually you don't always spend the entire allocated budget each year because we're always reapportioning things, at the, redirecting things at the end. And if you realize you even have a legacy fund at the very extremes if you needed it, there are, you have other cash balances that you could use if you need them. So I don't think you need such a big cash balance. So Russ and I are in agreement with that. And one of the big differences, I would think, in some of the plans versus Russ and Councilman Harper's is that the ones that kind of came out of the fiscal policy, and mine as well, kind of put the roads on a pay-as-you-go basis. In other words, the use of an income tax basically says, okay, we're going to generate this much revenue to pay for the annual ongoing road maintenance that we know we have to do every year just to keep from falling behind. And in Russ and Mitch's, they do a couple of more seeded bonds. I think one was 5.5, one 3.2, I believe. And so those bonds would be used to generate money to repair roads, and that amount of money, you know, you certainly have to pay interest on that. So there is a qualitative difference there.
And we do need to take a quick break before we wrap up this discussion. We are, of course, talking with City Councilman, Fort Wayne City Councilman Russ Yale and Dr. John Crawford with us in studio as well, Bob Kaler and Dan Stockman. We'll be right back in just about a minute and a half. Stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
On the next Fresh Air, an untold story from World War II. Thousands of American soldiers deserted the front lines. Journalist Charles Glass says most served bravely in combat before leaving their units.
Those soldiers who fought continuously and were never rotated out of the front lines simply were under so much pressure for so long that they cracked.
Glass's book is The Deserters. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Enjoy great wines and a gourmet 7-course meal at the second annual Picked by the Pros Wine Dinner, Friday, June 21st at the Bergstaff Place, presented by O'Daniel Audi Porsche. Tickets are $125 per person or $800 for a table of 8. Purchase online at nipr.fm or call WBOI at 452-1189.
We're glad you listen regularly to Talk of the Nation, but please, don't let your involvement end there. We want you to take an active role in shaping each day's program. Call us or send us an email and make your voice heard. Your opinions matter. I'm Neil Conan. Join the conversation next time on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This afternoon at 2 p.m. here on WBOI.
Just 5 minutes left in the program. This is Midday Matters on WBOI. I'm Sean Beter. Along with me in the studio, Bob Kaler from the Journal, or from the New Sentinel. Excuse me, Bob. It's been long enough.
We'd love to have you, Bob.
And, come on and Dan Stockman from the Journal Gazette with us by phone. Dr. John Crawford from the Fort Wayne City Council, and with us in studio, Russ Yale, also of the council. And Dan Stockman, I know we had to get to break before I could get to your comment.
Go ahead. We can't forget tomorrow night is the second of two legal public hearings on the various tax increases before the council. So if you have an opinion, the council wants to hear it, come out to Citizen Square at 5:30 p.m. on Tuesday. It's the garden level, which you and I would call the basement. Go to the council chambers there, and they will give you 2 minutes to speak your mind. But we also need to talk about what these proposals are. They're in addition to no income tax increase, there are three different income tax scenarios on the table. I guess nine, if you count all the permutations thereof. But Dr. Crawford, if you could kind of walk us through the basics of those three and how they would work.
Well,
again,
kind of
complicated, very basic in the short time that we have.
Basically, I think you're going to have a mixture of the property tax increases by taking the bank levy. All the proposals have that. And then some of them have different local option income taxes. There's a property tax replacement load and a public safety load that give different dollars and go to different jurisdictions in different ways. And but I think we will come to some decision. And one thing we need to remember, this is entirely a council decision. The mayor might have an opinion, but he has no vote and he has no veto. So whatever five people on council come up with, whether we have or do not have an income tax, will be from council only, because we're the income tax council.
Now, one of the
majority of the votes on it.
One of the nice things about the property relief load is that taxpayers in Allen County would see a new credit on their property
yes.
tax bill.
Correct.
That would lower their bill somewhat.
Correct. And if you're not at the cap, then your property tax bill would go down, but your income tax would go up. So you get some of it back.
And now if you do with public safety income tax, that will actually send actual hard revenue to the various jurisdictions that have public safety, such as the county.
Correct. Exactly. That's all new money. Right.
Right. Where the property tax relief LOIT, that will result in some net new revenue for
right.
the other jurisdictions, but it's net because of the way the property tax cap works, and they get more money under the cap.
Yep, and that's why it gets so complicated, because everything you touch affects everything else.
We have just about 90 seconds left in the program here, and I just want you to...
Yeah, I would like to sum up one other thing, too. I'd like to second what Russ Yale said, that this has been a very, very hard, long discussion by council. It's been held at a very high level, and everyone's been trying to come up with the best answer, and whatever it is, you know, it'll be what everybody thinks is the best thing, and I think this is how government should work, as opposed to many other levels where it doesn't work that way.
And Councilman Yale, we've touched on it a bit here. Obviously, we have the second hearing coming up, but council has to act on this soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would just encourage people to let their voices be heard. You get the government that you demand.
Mm-hmm. I think it's what the July 2nd that the council needs
right.
to act.
Yep, July 2nd will be the final vote. All nine members will be there. We're having a special meeting, and thank goodness it will be over on July 2nd, whatever it is. And personally, I'm headed for a beach. I'm going to bury myself up in sand and not listen to anything about council for weeks.
Well, I'd like to thank everybody for joining us this afternoon. Of course, our listeners, for your calls and your comments. Also, a big thanks to John Crawford and to Russ Yale. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us on Midday Matters.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having us.
Also, thank you to Bob Gaylor from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. I got it right that time, Bob.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Dan Stockman, we appreciate your expertise as well.
Always a pleasure.
I'm Sean Beter, and this is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 FM HD Channel 1 and online at nipr.fm. This is WBOY Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester. We're coming up on 1 o'clock. Fresh Air with your host, Terry Gross, is next. Have a great day and stick around.